This is Boston Public Radio. I'm Callie Crossley. This week, we've been looking at how Pope Benedict's resignation is reverberating locally within the Catholic community. Today, we're checking in with John Rogers. We check in with him every year around the holy season of Lent. John Rogers is a spokesman for the St. Francis ex Cabrini in Scituate. Back in 2004, Archbishop Sean O'Malley informed St. Francis that it would be one of the 85 churches slated to close in the reconfiguration process. But the church has not been closed. For 8 years, 3 months, and 19 days, parishioners have been in vigil, maintaining a 24-hour watch at the church. John, welcome back.
Callie, thanks for having me on. It's great to talk to you again. Callie, that breaks down to this is our 3,033rd day in vigil, 24/7. So, I mean, it's been quite a journey.
It certainly has been. And you got kind of a double whammy last week because coming on the heels of the blizzard, which you're still coping with down there in the Cape area, was also this resignation. So, first, I just have to know, what did you think when you heard that Pope Benedict was stepping down?
I was surprised. I'm not going to say I was shocked, but it leads to a lot of speculation as to why. Obviously, we look back at John Paul II. He died at 84 years old, and Benedict himself is already 85. So I'm sure it's expected that this is going to happen. The timing was a little surprising.
He could have died in office, however, so it's kind of brave a little bit for him, I think, to just say, you know, look, I'm just not doing well. I'm stepping down.
You know, I'll agree. And Benedict is, in my understanding, is more of an intellectual. And, you know, I look at this as a great opportunity to reach out and get more of a people's pope, if you would, like John Paul, somebody to reach out and rebuild the trust of the Roman Catholic Church. So, you know, as far as getting out there and making sure that he interacts with the parishioners of the Roman Catholic Church, I think that maybe he thought someone younger and somebody a little bit more, somebody healthier and somebody a little bit more suited to do that, it was important to put in. And I hope that that's the case. I think this is going to be an incredibly important transition from the more intellectual theologian to somebody who's going to be out there more of a diplomat and trying to rebuild the trust of the Roman Catholic Church. I think this is important.
I'm speaking with John Rogers, who's a spokesman for St. Francis ex Cabrini, where they've been sitting in vigil 24 hours a day for 8 years, since 2004. So we said Archbishop Sean O'Malley told your church and others, listen, we're closing you. But it was under Pope Benedict that a couple of other attempts to close you down again, if you will, came up. So he supported Archbishop O'Malley's move to close the churches out, though they didn't press hard. I mean, at any point, let's face it, they could come in and just do a heavy-handed thing, but they haven't done that, I think, because it would look bad for one reason.
Right.
But you know, that's always a possibility. So what is your sense about what the next person might do regard?
We're hopeful on a myriad of different levels. First of all, we hope to see a Holy See that will reach out and basically embrace the people, not only us as parishioners, but women as a whole. Have a serious discussion about married priests. Have a serious discussion about parishioner involvement and transparency. And we're hoping that maybe a more progressive pope would look at us, see our plight, and embrace the trials and the tribulations that we have traveled through. We're looking for somebody who's a lot more kind of open to the fact that the parishioners are truly, I believe, the church, and that without us, there is no church. And I think that it's important that they look at not necessarily St. Francis, but the parishioners as a whole and saying, you know what, without them, we're nowhere. Without them, we're nobody. So we're hoping that a new pope will embrace not only our struggle, but see the basic truths in what we're trying to accomplish here. So we're holding the Archdiocese of Boston accountable, is that we're not going to allow them to steal our church, and that's what they're trying to do, and that the people have stood up and protected that church. So, you know, a lot of people says just move on. It would have been a lot easier for us to move on and to leave this fight for somebody else. We drew the line in the sand and said, you know what, this is our responsibility. We're going to take it, and we're going to make sure that the people have a voice in their church that they created. And I think it's important that the new pope has that same type of thought process.
What is your sense that, other than, I know that you've made some, on your behalf, there have been some formal entreaties to get Pope Benedict and whomever else may rule on this to let your parishes be open again, or to at least remove the formal closing, nothing, they've been rejected. What's your sense about how where you are on the agenda of all items that the Vatican may be thinking about?
The only way I could describe it is we're now in double overtime. Mm. We have appealed. We have taken every possible appeal to its last. We have actually had a canonical expert, which is our canonical expert, is one of two canonical experts in the world that can appeal directly to the Holy See. That, in essence, means appeal directly to the Pope. He deferred back to the Apostolic Signatura, and that's where we find ourselves right now, waiting moment by moment for a Vatican decision on our survival. So we as a group of parishioners, we as a church, have made the promise that we would use every appeal possible and see it to its final, and that we are now right in the final phases. And as far as timing goes, I can only label it as double overtime at this point. Mm. And we are hopeful, though, as we have been from the very, very beginning, that you would just see the essence of right versus wrong here. You know, we are not going to pay to replenish the coffers depleted by sexual abuse of the Archdiocese of Boston. And this is truly a land grab, and we have made a promise to not only our parishioners and ask Cardinal Sean to meet us any place, any time, and to talk about anything except the closure of St. Francis. And that includes the parishioners of St. Francis repurchasing their church. So all options are on the table. We're not here to take a free ride on the Archdiocese. We have worked hard to this day to maintain that church, and we will continue to do so. So every time I hear move on, it would have been a lot easier to have done so. But we are open to all and every discussion except the closure. And once again, that includes the parishioners of St. Francis repurchasing their church. So other than that, we're not quite sure what we can do.
Well, John Rogers, I've heard so many people say that those of you who have decided to sit vigil are among the most faithful Catholics, because you really have decided that your faith is paramount, no matter what the circumstances are. And a lot of people admire you, even if they don't quite understand what you're doing. So 8 years, we'll be checking back with you.
Kelly, thank you.
All righty. John Rogers is a spokesman for St. Francis ex Cabrini in Scituate, and they have been sitting vigil for 8 years. So, what is romance? What motivates us to pursue love or to dodge it? Robin Abrams, Boston Globe's misconduct columnist, joins us to explain her theory of romance. I'm Callie Crossley. This is 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.